We are back from a special council meeting that was called for the purposes of convening an executive session. The executive session had some discussions about wave yards, some of the legal issues. I now need to adjourn the executive session, so do I have a motion to that effect? Have a motion and second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to then call a special, not a special, a study session, the study session of Thursday, May 31st, 2007 to order. And we're trying to hook up Councilmember Whalen. Councilmember Whalen, are you on the line?
I'm here, Mayor.
Okay. Let's go ahead. The first item is review items on the agenda for June 4th, 2007. We have that packet in front of us. And let's take a look. We've got page one, page two. We will be conducting a public hearing on the proposed fiscal year 07-08 budget plan, and then taking action on the tentative adoption of that budget plan. Then we get into liquor license applications on page one. Any questions there? Okay, page two, start on contracts. I have a conflict on 6C.
Yes, you do.
All right. Any others?
Yes.
All right. We both have asphalt work, so I'll turn those, if you have any questions, over to the Vice Mayor. Okay. 6C, how long does, I guess that tile roofing is like ancient. I always thought tile lasts forever. I'm wrong, huh?
I'm sorry, Mayor. Six, which one?
Six. 6E.
Oh, E. Okay, yeah.
This is the old post office building that I think we acquired. Is that so? What's
it
the
is.
How long has that tile been up there?
That tile has been up for 25 or 30 years. It's actually there's problems with the underlayment and the nails, and we actually have full sections of tile shifting and starting to slide down.
Right.
Tiles are very brittle, failing.
So do you have to get rid of the tile and replace it all, or do you just re-nail
yes.
it?
Yeah, we're replacing it all because the tiles are too brittle right now, and they're breaking as they slide and fall.
Okay, and this is just, I have a tile roof. I thought my roof was supposed to last for 60 to 80 years. Why is this one no good after 25?
Mayor, I'd say more like 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Even for, even for tile?
Yes.
I thought that was the difference between shingles and tile. You put on a tile, you could forget it. Not the
no.
case, huh? All right.
I actually just redid our roof at home, and it's the underlayment goes on you, and you have to go in every 25, 30
okay.
years and do something. So.
All right. Thank you. All right. That's page four, page five. We have ordinances for setting June 25th and a lot of different utilities for those. Councilor Griswold.
Just two questions. On 7A, there is a reference to a special rate for Apache Wells. I'd like to sort of question that. You can get back to me afterwards on that. And 7B, do we have a separate outside rate for outside the city? I've been told yes or no, but it seemed to be, in my reading, it looked like we had a separate rate for outside the city that we were allowed to charge. So those are my questions on those, on water rates.
Can we get back to you on that one?
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
Right. Can on water service utility, I haven't followed that real close. Went through the transportation infrastructure committees, but do we still have that water filling station
yep.
out there? We finally get rid of that.
Mayor, we still have the, Dave, what do we call it?
Prisman Water Hauling.
Water hauling station.
Right, it's,
and we're going to be bringing that to the transportation.
Provide water for county people.
Visit about that probably in the fall. That's correct. We're going to be bringing that.
So it's going to come back.
We want to bring it to the yes. We want to bring it to the council committee to discuss the future of that.
Okay, Tom. Did you want to pull all these, or how did you want to handle that?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. 7A through E on this page, I would like pulled.
All right, Vice Mayor.
Mayor, these are introductions.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, not the actual.
Well, that's why I didn't mark it. Leave them on.
Leave them on?
But I just wanted to make the comment so it doesn't surprise anybody on 7E. While I voted for approval for this in the Audit and Finance Committee, I even served notice at that point in time that there was a great likelihood I would be voting no on this when it came forward for the full council. This is an electric energy cost adjustment factor issue for the electric company. Our City of Mesa Electric services right around 7 square miles of the City of Mesa. The rest of the city is on Salt River Project. I have no problem with our making money on our utilities. That's the model that was set up in the 1940s for how we operate the city, how we get money to operate the city. However, in this instance, this is not the entire city. This is just a small portion of the city. And because our rates are significantly, in my opinion, significantly different from those that Salt River Project has for our customers, I'm saying rates, and that's the correct incorrect term, but the amount of money an average customer would have to pay is significantly higher. I think that this should just be absorbed into the electric utility, not tacked on as an additional charge. So I'm going to be voting no on it when it comes forward. I didn't want anybody to be surprised. I'm not pulling it off because it's an introduction, but I wanted people to know where I am.
Okay. And is the electric utility forecast to be doing a transfer to the general fund? Is that where you're...
Yes.
It's a very narrow margin for the next 2 years because of the decision process that we're going through on the possible sale or analysis of the sale of the utility. So we have a very thin transfer schedule for the next 2 years.
Why is it thin?
Well, we'd taken what we'd proposed on capital expenditures that were going to be bonded, and we've moved them to paying for out of revenues.
Oh, so, all right. So you're doing it all from cash instead of bonds?
That is correct.
All right. Okay. Okay. You want to leave it on for introduction, just making that
yes.
comment at this point?
Yes.
All right. Anything else on page 5? All right, page 6, Tom.
A question on 7H, which is the rebate program for the landscape. And when we discussed this in the Audit and Finance Committee, it was a repeal of a current program and then the implementation of a new program. Is that included in what's being proposed here?
Councilmember Rawls, yes, that was what was introduced to the committee, is that we'll be repealing this particular program, which is currently an ordinance,
right.
And in its place we'll have more of a conversion program that's just through the Utilities Department policy.
Okay, so that's the approval of the other program isn't part of this?
No, it's not.
There's two aspects. Number one, I've already finished my remodeling or relandscaping
yeah.
in the back, so I couldn't take advantage of the
yeah.
program.
Me too.
But I wouldn't take an advantage of the program because... As the way the program was described to me at the committee meeting, is that not only will you go out and measure the size of the grass that's being taken out, but there's going to be city involvement in deciding what kind of plants can be put back, and that oversteps the bounds of propriety in my view. So I would urge the utility department not
okay.
to get into the plant police business. You know.
Sure, we can take a look at that. That's no problem.
Okay. But we're not voting. I just didn't want to vote for that. But here, all we're doing is voting for the repeal of the current program.
Exactly.
That's fine then. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. 7I and 7J are the same. Are the same things. They both passed, but one went to DEC. The other one went to P&Z. P&Z voted 5-2 for approval. I'm not sure why we're introducing both of them. Am I missing something here?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, yes, I wanted to bring your attention to those two. We actually only need one of the two to be introduced, but we put them both on the agenda because they both have gone to the different bodies. Anytime we do a text change to the zoning ordinance, it's required to go to both the DDC and to the P&Z board. Staff took the same recommendation to both boards, but the P&Z, when they discussed it, decided to insert an additional phrase into the ordinance, which made the two ordinances different. P&Z included in theirs that a requirement for the resolution to come through P&Z for recommendation before it comes to the council. And so that's the difference between the two ordinances.
Okay, I actually made a note out to the side that I have no problem with having a required review by P&Z before passage. But DDC didn't have that same, they didn't hear the P&Z thing before.
DDC meets in the morning, then P&Z met in the afternoon, and one had already, instead of going back and extending out this process, we just brought them both, let this board introduce whichever one you want to introduce, and then we'll bring that back for actual consideration.
And the idea being in the future that this would be done by resolution, not by ordinance, which
right.
is what we've done in the past.
Right.
P&Z was concerned that they would then not have any opportunity to look at it. They think it has has issues that they should be involved with, I'm fine with that. So, Mayor, rather than introduce them both, can we just do the 7J one? I think there's going to have to be some direction from the council on what the council wants, but...
Okay. Is the J one where it goes back to P&Z?
It allows P&Z to give input on it.
But then DDC is going to want to have it go back through DDC, so how do you handle that?
I'm okay with everybody having input on it. I mean, ultimately, we're going to make the decision. I think that allowing DDC and P&Z to look at it and give their recommendation does not hold us any, you know, it's just their recommendation. They looked at it. Great. No problem.
And this is just to provide the fees for planning services be up, so that when they go back and look at fees, that's the extent of what they go back to look at?
Yes, Mayor. It would require the resolution, just like you're looking at other resolutions for approving fee changes with the budget. Any fee changes having to do with anything with zoning ordinance would require that resolution be looked at by DDC and P&Z before it gets here.
Okay. Well, I guess the design review, or not design review, the P&Z has more issues throughout the city. Is that why you're
they
looking
do.
At J?
Yes.
Okay. Comments on that? You want to drop 7I and just do J, or look at both? All right. Rex?
Am I correct that this includes also annexation fees?
Yes, Mayor. Councilmember Griswold, that's correct.
What are the current annexation fees? I couldn't sort of derive that out of them.
The current fee is $250 for anything less than 5 acres and $500 more than that. The resolution that you'll see in a few weeks increases that by 8%, but that's what the current fee is.
Okay. Thank you. Right. I have no problem with that.
Just Jay? Okay. Let's drop 7I then, I think, in the field. Scott?
Actually, Mayor, if we're done, I wanted to move to 7K.
Okay.
I had a question on the personnel rules that we're looking to approve, Section 434, Section E, chargeability of sick hours for someone injured on the job, and the wording that's highlighted here says that we're going to be charging employees for sick leave unless they're admitted to the hospital. But what about those injuries like a broken arm that will take an officer off a beat or a firefighter off a truck and yet does not require hospitalization? How are we going to, be giving that out, those hours back? How's that going to work?
Mayor, Councilmember Somers, the way the policy is written now, if an employee is injured on the job and is not able to return to work before they can participate in the industrial insurance program, they're required to provide 16 hours of leave before they're eligible to participate in that. The change that we're proposing in the rules is to reduce that a little bit, to say if an employee has a fairly serious injury, and by serious we're defining as if they have to be admitted to the hospital, we think then that injury is sufficient, that it would not require them to have 16 hours of leave charged. Unless they are admitted to the hospital, the way the current rules are now, they would still be charged the 16 hours prior to participating in the IIP program.
But Mayor, Councilman Somers, we've had discussions with the employee groups very recently about saying this was the first change that we agreed to, but I've committed to them, and I think we mentioned this to the council last time we discussed this, is that we'd still want to continue to explore this. We still think that there are other ways to not have to charge employees for being injured on the work. There are some occasions where an employee injured work-related can return to work in different capacities. You know, even an officer with a broken arm may be able to do some work within, you know, administrative work. What we're trying to do is create the balance that makes sure that, I think on one side this is probably too strict and probably very strong. I think it's something we need to loosen up a little bit. But we want to continue to have the discussions, and we've had the preliminary ones, and HR will continue with the employee associations about what can we do then to ensure, though, that as part of this process, there is some type of an evaluation done by our independent third-party reviewer to make sure that you know, someone who's injured can't return to work and things like that. So we have no problem making a commitment. I think we committed to try to get back to council as quickly as possible on modifying this language again, hopefully soon we get back in the fall.
I mean, I would even be happier with something that says at the city manager's discretion that could be returned.
Well, I guess what I'm telling the council is that we plan on bringing this back, this item specifically bringing back, because I think we need to work the language. This is actually an improvement from where it was, unfortunately, and we still see there's more room for improvement. We just ran out of time on really trying to discuss all the issues surrounding industrial compensation.
Rex?
On that same point, I think this is a good first step forward, but we need to go probably further to treat our people probably a little better. But I had a question on 7G, if we can go back. Are we through with 7K?
Okay. Let me ask one more on K, too.
Yeah.
On page 6, probably it's top of the page, but I'm not sure what section that is. It's not 310, it's above that. 260, I guess, employment of relatives. It says mayor, city council, boards, and committees. It addresses that the mayor and council members will not be allowed to have relatives employed in city departments as full-time or benefited part-time employees. How does boards and committees apply to that? This section, well, it doesn't. I would assume that can somebody be a board member or a because we have lots of different citizen boards. Could a spouse be on a board? Is that addressed or not? And a lot of times we have not in the same department in which they're employed. So if it was a Parks and Rec employee that they couldn't have a spouse then on the Parks and Rec board. I understand that, but there's a lot of different, you know, if somebody is driving a sanitation truck, I don't see why they couldn't, be on a excluded from it. And maybe it's not addressing it in this issue, that item.
Mayor Hocker, I think the intent of that particular rule was to identify those high-profile boards and to try to avoid that conflict of interest. I don't know that we've had any specific instances in some of these other boards as to whether or not there would be a conflict with the rule. So I think we would have to take that kind of on a case-by-case basis.
So at this point, there's not an exclusion from having that take place. Okay, let's verify. Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Back on the issue that Scott brought up, I have been assured that the employee groups are comfortable, Chris, with your assurances that you'll be looking at this and bringing it back. I just wanted to make sure that as you looked at it, I don't think that the financial impact of it is going to be significant, but I just want to make sure you were considering that in the budget, because if you bring it back in the fall, that will still be in the budget cycle. Just wanted to make sure that was clear. Thank you.
Okay. We're on page 6. Introductions are continued on page 7. Rex.
Just a quick question on 7G. I noticed a lot of other cities have an after-hours fee that's a lot higher than ours, like $90 after 5 o'clock in the evening if you call out. It's something we might consider. I just we right now have the same day or a next day, but it might be a good service to charge, and I think if we have to go out there at night to turn on someone's water, particularly because that's what they need that day moving into a new apartment, that we ought to charge for it.
And Mayor and Councilmember Griswold, that's what we're recommending with this increase to the same day fee, to go from a $30 fee to $45.
Yeah, the other cities have after a certain hour, it goes up from that point. If you want it at 6 o'clock at night, it's different than if you want it 8 to 5.
Yes, and we do that after 5 o'clock at night.
Is there a different fee? I didn't see that in there. A higher fee than the 45?
No, not. It is the 45. Prior to that, there is no charge. There's
same
no
day?
Additional charge. There's just a regular reconnects charge, depending on what type of service that you're asking to be.
So if I want same day service, 8 to 5, there's no charge for it?
There is a charge.
Okay.
There is a charge for water, a separate charge for water. There's a charge for gas, and we have a separate charge for electric, depending on how long it will take us to be out in the field, gas being the most costly.
If I call you at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I want same-day service.
We're going to charge you our regular reconnect fees plus the $45.
It doesn't make sense because at 4 o'clock you can't get a truck usually out to me by 5 when people go home. That's something you might look at. The other cities all seem to have an after 5 fee.
We do have a standby crew that works regularly every evening.
Okay. It's usually a higher cost service, so anyhow, it's might want to look at it. I think this is a good step forward, what we've done. I think we ought to look at what some of the other cities do to get the service and charge for it.
Certainly.
Okay. All right. That's page 6 then, page 7, introductions, continued on page 8. Page 9, additional ones. Vice Mayor.
Just a comment on 7R, and I know I've made this comment before, but when a vote is being reported, when I see 6-1-2, what that tells me is 6 yeses, 1 no, and 2 abstentions. That isn't how this is.
Correct. Mayor, Vice Mayor, I noticed that yesterday, too. That actually totals up to 9, and there's only 7 on the board.
Yeah.
It's actually a 4-0-1 vote. We'll have that corrected on the
thank you
when it comes back for hearing.
Thank you. If you could fix that, I'd appreciate it. How many times did they? Oh, okay. Your district, I see.
Good catch. That's page 8, page 9, page 10. Tom.
Mayor, if I could just have 8E and F. 8D, I don't want polls. Well, these are actual take action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are.
So 8D I opposed in the committee, but I've since discussed them and I have no problems with it. Mm-hmm. But E and F I still want to vote no on, so I would ask that they be taken off.
All right. Any others on page 10? Let's try page 11. Tom.
I'm still not 100% sure on 9A, so let's pull it off for now.
Okay. And I appreciate the explanation on 9B. I'm comfortable with not trying to attempt the refunds. It sounds like it's more complicated than the dollar magnitude's worth. So thank you. All right, that's page 11, page 12. And we have on page 12, 10B and 10C, which have to do with Waveyard. That is going to be part of our discussion here this morning, too. So we'll handle those. Is 10A also? Yes. Correct, 10A, B, and C. All right, page 13. Nope. Actually, we have D, E, and F, too.
Yeah. Mayor, we purposely try to group them all together there for you. So.
All right. Tom.
Just a question. I mean, I don't anticipate this happening, but do we want to, I mean, let's assume that we do the rezoning and then we don't do 10F. I mean, do we want to do D, E, and F before we get to A, B, and C, or is there a reason why we're doing the zoning before we approve the deals?
Yes, there is a reason. Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, because the zoning will actually impact the development agreement. First, it's our property, so if we rezone and then the development agreement is not adopted, we have simply rezoned City of Mesa land, and we can change it back if we choose to. But the development agreement has to be in compliance or has to be consistent with the zoning and the general plan. So we adopt the general plan and the zoning, and then council considers the development agreement.
Fine. I just wanted to make sure we were doing the horse first and then the cart rather than vice versa.
Okay. Any other questions on those two pages? And then we have subdivision plats on page 14. Tonight is. All right. Councilmember Whalen, did you have any issues with the agenda?
No, Mayor, just one. I do have a conflict on the Nesbitt contracting. It's early in the agenda, same as you do.
Is that 6C. One of the paving ones?
I think it's 6C.
All right. You will be joining me on that one then, I think.
And that's it.
All right. Okay, let's go back then to the study session. Item number 2 is to hear a presentation and discuss the Waveyard project and documents. Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. As I have with all the Waveyard discussions, I will declare the conflict of interest that I have, refrain from discussion and voting, and actually I think I'll go sit in the back of the room. The conflict that I have is that my daughter-in-law has an ownership interest in her family's business. They own all of the existing water parks in the valley, and as such, city attorney has advised me that I have a conflict of interest, and I will continue to refrain from discussion and voting on this item. Thank you.
Okay, so noted. All right.
Mayor Scott Rigby's going to start off the conversation, and he's handing out some information for the council now.
Good morning, Mayor. I'm Scott Rigby with the City Manager's Office, and Debbie Spinner with the and Jim Smith, the City Attorney's Office. We want to take an opportunity to take a few minutes to walk through the Wave Yard development agreement and other project other details related to that. This will not focus on the planning and zoning portion of the case, but more to the development agreement and the nuts and bolts. Just a little background on the Wave Yard history. The Wave Yard and City began discussions with Wave Yard back in the late summer of last year. At that time, the city originally discussed opportunities to do a project out in East Mesa with more property, but at the end of the day, Wave Yard came back and inquired about the Riverview site. The city directed at that time to go out and visit with the neighborhoods and assess their interest on this concept of Wave Yard. Again, the Wave Yard concept was a unique entertainment facility would combine whitewater rafting, snorkeling, scuba, surfing, along with a resort hotel, some retail and office, and resort villas. They met with the neighborhood. The neighborhood reported back to us, the city manager, and to Wave Yard that they would be willing to consider and show interest in the project, and that really what kicked off our discussion. At December 18th of last year, staff brought forward a discussion outline that kind of outlined the basic deal points. And ask council whether or not to continue to discuss with Wave Yard and enter negotiations. Wave Yard at that time, council at that time approved that and directed staff to enter into negotiations. We've been working through that process to date. At the same time, they've been going through the planning and zoning process, and I think today you see that process coming to council. Back on May 21st of this month, as required by state law, we declared a notice of intent that outlines the basic deal points of the project. I'll just walk through those right now. Essentially, the city will sell approximately 121 acres to Wave Yard for the development of the project. That's the maximum we could sell is 121. We think it might actually back away from that point. The purchase price would be $30 million. Wave Yard would pay $10 million down upon close of escrow. The remaining $20,000 would be secured with a $20 million note with the 4.4 interest rate, and that was based off the most recent, I think earlier this month, TO bond rate. And then additionally, Mesa will lease approximately 5-acre site, which is immediately east of the current wastewater treatment site. This is just a project map area. This is the same map that went out to the notice of intent. You'll see the area in blue. Deep blue is the area that we're proposing that would, if they perform, that we'd be willing to sell for that $30 million. The light blue up in the corner there, you'd see the lease property, which is in case the wastewater treatment plant needs to be expanded, that would be the site that they would expand both on the east, and then we'd still retain some property on the west if they need to expand that way, along with the proposed reconfigured Mesa City Park. One of the key aspects of this is they have to perform, and there's several performance in what we call the minimum improvements. And they have to build these minimum improvements or to qualify for the economic incentives. Let me just run through those. The minimum entertainment improvements include a surfing wave pool, a whitewater paddle and training facility, a scuba dive and snorkeling lagoon. The resort component is a 400-room, and that's up from back in December. It was a 320-room. That has increased to a 400-room hotel, AAA, four-diamond, mobile, four-star resort, with, in addition to the Wave Yard component, an indoor water park. So you'd have a Wave Yard outdoor water park, and tied with a resort, you'd have an indoor water park. And then the final would be a retail space of a minimum of 200,000 square feet. And they're proposing it to be a specialty type of use rather than the grocery warehouse or similar type of stores. If they build those and open those by a certain time, these are the incentives they'd be eligible to be rebated or credited. The TPT, which is commonly known as a sales tax, of the 1.75, the city would retain 1%, and Wave Yard would be rebated or credited 0.75. And that's the same as the 50-50 we talked back in December. This is just the legal way that we show up 0.75 of the 1.5. In addition, our tax attorneys have said to make sure we hold harmless the quality of life and streets, that it'll be 0.75 of the 1.2 non-allocated general fund dollars. The use tax, the 1.75, we'd retain the 1% and waiver to be rebated or credited the 0.75. Again, this is all based on the sales tax or use tax generated on the site. And then finally, the TOT, which is unique. This is commonly known as the bed tax. Of the 3% total that we have for bed tax, the city would retain 1.5, and waiver would be eligible or rebated for credit for the 1.5. And that was key. That was really, in our discussions with them, we said, you need to go have that discussion with the Conventions and Visitors Bureau. They signed on to the project, and they committed to that. At the same time, Mesa understood the need to make sure traffic continues to flow and operate, and we agreed, based on the improvements that appear at this point to be necessary to improve 8th Street and Dobson, that we would be agreeable to up to $1.5 million of those street improvements. Again, those would have to be publicly bid and then accepted by engineering and still have a one-year warranty on that in order to be eligible for that reimbursement. And then basically the term of the incentive period is once they do close of escrow, it is a maximum of 24 years or $20 million plus interest, either one of those. Let me talk a little about the key dates. On June 4th, obviously coming up will be the key dates. We'll talk a little bit more about that. City Attorney will talk in depth about what will need to occur on Monday night. If the council so chooses, there will be a call on election no later than July 9th of this year. The election would be November 6th, if I'm correct. Closing on the property would be no later than January of 2010. The commencement of construction, meaning where they'd actually start constructing the improvements, would need to occur no later than 60 days from that closing. And the completion of construction, opening of the minimum improvements, would need to occur within the 32 months following that closing. Let's talk a little about Riverview Park. There's been much discussion about that. The city is proposing to sell 25.79 acres from the existing 53.17 acre Riverview Park. Per our federal guidelines, because back when we built the original park, we used federal funds to help improve those parks, we must retain a minimum of 27.38. As we go to the next slide here in a second, you'll see that the Riverview Park will be reconfigured to 28 acres. As originally discussed, the city will relocate those soft fields that currently exist at Riverview, and the staff is currently researching potential relocation sites, including existing and or new land acquisitions. This will be the reconfigured park layout. As you see, you retain the underlying lake, the soccer field, and the sand area. We'll work to ensure there's adequate parking and other uses within that. In addition, there'll be a new linear park along 8th Street that we think will be important and functional. The linear park will include a wide recreation path and other activity centers. This is common throughout the United States. Linear parks. And then a key portion of that is the reconfigured linear park will be constructed and maintained by Wayguard. Obviously, they have an interest in making sure that looks as green, as clean, as functional as it can. And so they've agreed to that portion. So even though we will retain that fee simple title for that property along 8th Street, they have agreed to construct and maintain that. There's been a lot of discussion about the public vote and the election costs. The council will be asked to consider calling an election, and then Wayguard has agreed to pay for the city's election costs, which is estimated to be approximately $250,000. There's a lot of questions about what needs to occur and how do we hold the city protected against the actions. This is related to prior to close of escrow and transfer of title. Wayguard must submit and receive site plan approval for all minimum improvements, and that would be the entertainment, which is meaning the Wayguard, the resort, and the retail. So they'll have to come back to that process. They will also have to come back to the process for design review board approval for both the Wayguard and the resort. And then a key aspect is Wayguard must pay for all minimum improvement permit fees for Wayguard and resort prior to closing. So in relation, if you think about Wayguard, and we'll talk a little about the numbers, Wayguard is estimated to cost $100 million just for the Wayguard, and the resort, I think, is around the $65 million. So the permit, they'll have to pull those permits and pay those permits before they can close on the property. So that's the significant cost and commitment from them. And finally, the city manager will have the opportunity to review the documents that WaveGuard provides, that he can determine whether or not they have sufficient financial capacity to do the project. Even after the title transfers, the property has a reverter in place until the construction of the WaveGuard begins. And the restrictions, there are restrictions on land use if WaveGuard is not built. And unless the minimum improvements are completed and opened by a date specific, WaveGuard will not be entitled to any of the economic incentives. Again, after title transfers, we will additionally have a promissory note for the $20 million plus the 4.4 interest. We have a note in the first position. We'll have a deed of trust on the property. And then also, as we discussed back in December, we'll have an annual letter of credit. And just based on the findings of fact, which we'll talk a little bit about later, that's estimated after the initial construction costs and all that would be approximately $1.5 million would be an annual letter of credit. I'll turn it over to Debbie.
Mayor and Council, I'm going to spend just a minute to talk about what actions the Council will be asked to take on June 4th if it intends to go forward with the WaveGuard project. We have it all grouped together for you so that everyone understands the full scope of the project and we can have one discussion completely analyzing the project. It's found under item 10 as we went through earlier. First, we'll have a public hearing on the general plan amendment that's required, and then Council will take action on a resolution to adopt the minor general plan amendment. We'll also ask Council to take action on a zoning action, rezoning this property, which would make it entitle it or make it consistent with what WaveGuard intends to construct if Council adopts the purchase agreement and the development agreement. Item 10D is something that's specifically required by state statute. If the Council intends to enter into a retail development tax incentive agreement, prior to entering into the agreement, the state law requires that the Council make specific findings of fact, and Council will be asked to make two findings of fact. And Scott's going to go over this in a little bit with regard to what did the independent economic analysis show. But Council is required to find, as a finding of fact, first that the economic or that the revenue will exceed the economic incentive during the term of the agreement, and second that but for the incentive, the development would not have come to the City of Mesa in the same time, manner, and place as it is coming before you on Monday. The statute further requires that the economic analysis in terms of will the revenue generated exceed the tax incentive provided, that has to be verified by an independent economic analysis. And that's what I said. Scott has the report for you. Excuse me, and he'll be going over that in just a minute. On item 10D, the findings of fact, the statute requires that it be adopted by a two-thirds vote. If the full council were voting on this issue, it would require five of the seven council members. However, in this case, because Vice Mayor Walters has declared a conflict of interest, it is two-thirds of the remaining council members. So it would be two-thirds of the six voting council members, which would be four votes. There is a case fairly on point. The name of the case is Mobile Community Council versus Maricopa County. It's a 2006 case which was interpreting a similar statute, not this particular statute, but a relatively similar statute. So it will take four votes for the council to approve the findings of fact on Monday. Item 10E, council is being asked to take action on a resolution authorizing the city manager to sell up to 121 acres and to lease approximately 5 acres to the WaveGuard Development LLC. Again, that will take four votes. And then last action will be item 10F, and that is to take action on a resolution authorizing the city manager to enter into the retail development tax incentive agreement. Again, that requires a two-thirds vote by the state statute, but again, that will be two-thirds of the remaining council members, or four votes. We have met with council and gone through the agreements. We've not yet made the agreements public because they're still being revised. Our goal is to make them public today. We hope to provide them not only to the media and any interested residents if they contact us. We will also attempt to place them on the website either this afternoon or tomorrow morning so that any interested citizens can review the agreements themselves. And I think that's all I have on that issue, unless council has any questions.
Okay.
As required by state law, we need to do a third-party analysis and find out that staff contracted with Applied Economics, which is a firm locally in the Phoenix area. They are familiar with this state law requirement, and we employed them. They recently completed that analysis. You should have a copy sitting in front of you. It is an 8-page document, 2-page cover memo, and then a 6-page with the detail backup on that. The key thing on the bottom of the first page of that agreement, their analysis does state that the tax incentive offered for the $20 million plus interest, that this project would produce more revenue during that time period than that incentive period, than the incentive amount. The second action on the page 2 of that report, and then we'll get into the actual dollars and cents of this report, is the second component says, it's the finding of fact whether or not this project would have located in their best estimate without the tax incentive. The bottom of that second page of the memo is the second paragraph to the bottom. It says that in their estimation that this would not have occurred without the incentive based on the trade area and the current projections they have. And then the final paragraph there, it states that they also conclude that the incentive and the third-party analysis and development agreement and the requirements within that meet the requirements of state law, and that we are compliant with that. Now, to get to the details of the actual cost analysis, I'll point you to the front page of the third page of the third page document, which is the summary. I want to direct you to there's a spreadsheet that talks about the summary of assumptions, and we talked earlier about the permit fees and what that would, how it would work, and that they pay. Just for relation, if you see the hotel, the construction cost is estimated at about $64.5 million. The indoor water park is $24 million, and the wave yard outdoor is approximately $104 million. And those would, they need to put full permits on that valuation of construction. So you'll see that the permit fees that they'll have to pull before they could close on the property would be significant. If you go back to the spreadsheets that start near the back, you'll see each year how they're estimating the cash flow would work. Starting in 2010, which was projected to be their start of construction, through 2013, again, this is the idea that interest will start at close of escrow but won't become due until the first day of the fifth year, so they will be generating sales tax out there, but it'll be set up aside and won't be able to be applied to the balance until they complete the minimum improvements. Once that those minimum improvements occur and are open, then they can apply the sales tax they've created on that site to that date. And then from that point forward, any sales tax, use tax, bed tax, that then will be applied to the balance. I think, Mary, you're asking about the letter of credit, what that rate would be. I think you see an early indication starting out at year 2015, it starts to, it's a consistent line, about $1.575 million. That's just an early estimate of what that annual letter of credit would need to be. And then the last page, look at the bottom below the gray line. This is kind of the critical aspect, is you'll see the credit to the developer, almost $35 million. And that's, again, they're paying the $10 million down. And then they need to pay off that remaining $20 million plus the 4.4. So they'll need to, if they just go along at a standard clip, this doesn't take any growth factor into this projection, they would need to generate basically $35 million in order to pay off that outstanding portion to the city. And then for the general fund, would be $20 million over that 25-year period because you took an additional year out. And then bed tax, about $8.3 million to the city. And then the quality of life and street revenues, which is separate from any incentive, which is not eligible, would be $21 million. So you see it's a significant source of revenue to the city over the life of it. These calculations also do not include Applied Economics, wanted to let me know, any use tax projections. They simply did not have numbers to use, but in their estimate, they'd say if there were, it would just shorten the time period for the rebate to be paid off. And again, these are only for, they could only run the analysis based on the three minimum improvements, which was the resort, the retail, and the waveyard. So if there are other functions built on that property that are approved, such as the office or resort villas, and their sales tax or bed tax or use tax or lease tax, that would also go into this rebate. So it would also impact the payoff. I think that's it at this point. If there's any questions, I guess what we'd like to do, say first, and I think City Attorney said this earlier, is we'd like to thank a whole host of city staff that worked on this, more than just the three of us. There's engineering, real estate, transportation, utilities, city clerk, parks and recs. So they've all been heavily involved with this process. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions on it? Tom.
I need to, you mentioned the number on the last page of the economic analysis. It's $34,846,000. Then you mentioned that doesn't include the $10 million down. That's right. That's $20 million. That's
based on that $20 million
plus $20 million plus 4.4% interest plus the $1.5 million reimbursement for right. The
public
improvements. Which we receive the benefit of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you set aside the bed tax, which is does accrue to us, but it gets passed through for the most part to the...
Correct.
We've got $42 million worth of benefit and $34 million worth of cost, essentially. And there was... The fact is that we're looking at $42 million... And we're giving away, if you want to use that phrase, or the incentive is worth no more than $35 million.
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, again, this is the idea that if they pay the $10 million down, now they're having to pay off the 20
right.
plus 4.4, we're not cutting them a check similar to the Riverview.
No, I understand
it is
that.
A credit.
I understand that. But the amount of the
incentive,
the cumulative correct. Amount of the incentive is $35 million. If it takes them this long to pay it off, if the sales tax are higher, it'll be shorter, and the incentive will be shorter because it'll be less interest.
Correct.
Right. But the fact is, and I'm going to get to a simpler analysis here. These people have concluded professionally that the incentive to the developer is $35 million, and the benefit to the city, if you include the bed tax, is $50 million. So we're getting more than the incentive, which is
correct.
What the one requirement of is. Now, the way to attack this number is to say it's all based on projections. It's all based on assumptions. It's all based on performance that as we sit here today, we don't know whether or not that is going to work out or not. But so let me try to take it to a little smaller level. The way we have structured this deal is that if there is no sales tax generated off the site, they don't get any incentive. So for every $100 worth of sales, the city gets the quality of life money in its entirety, the street money in its entirety, and then 50 cents of the 1.2 that's left. That totals more than the incentive. They get 0.75, we get one. So for every dollar sold, we come out ahead. If there's no dollar sold, they don't get an incentive. It doesn't cost us anything. So if you go to the transit occupancy tax, it's half. And then if you go to the use tax, it's we get a dollar and they get 75 cents. So the point is that this is great and we're required by the statute, but the question whether or not the incentive, whether the benefit to the city exceeds the incentive, is answered entirely by the way we structured the deal, which is no sales, no incentive, and for each dollar of sales, we get more than they do. So I think it's really important for people to understand that this isn't based, I mean, the conclusion that we have to reach on Monday night when we vote isn't based upon all these assumptions of 12 billion people coming through the doors and everyone spending $8,000 a day and hotel rooms that, you know, set the numbers at whatever you want. The assumptions are not what drives the conclusion. What drives the conclusion here is the way we structured the deal. You don't perform, you don't get anything. You perform, we get more than you do. Dollar for dollar. Every dollar, first dollar, second dollar, millionth dollar, billionth dollar, we get more than they do per dollar. So I think this is a, I know we had to do this, but our staff and the developers structured a deal in a way that there is no possible conclusion that can be reached other than the fact that this is the benefit exceeds the incentive over the life of the agreement, which is what we have to require, which is what we have to find. So I feel real comfortable with that problem.
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, I might also add that if they don't perform, so there are no tax incentives, not only do they not get the tax incentives, they still have to pay the city of Mesa on the note.
Exactly.
Then they will still, Mesa will still be left whole with its the intent right. of...
Then it turns into a straight sale of property with a note, and they pay us, and they don't get the incentives. They have to find out other revenue sources to do it. Right. But if there is an incentive, it is unquestionably clear. There can't be any other way of looking at these documents. And I think people out there understand that Kino and I love spreadsheets, and we look at these things, and it's inescapable conclusion is that the benefits exceed the incentive. Because if we didn't have this deal, there wouldn't be the sales tax revenue. And if there is no sales tax revenue, there is no incentive. So it's very simple to me. I knew that as soon as we got the deal structured. I didn't need to see this today. But it's nice to see it rounded up to 20 and 40 and 35 million. But the point is, analyze it from the first dollar and the last dollar. It's the same. So thank you all.
Okay. Other questions? Rex, comments?
Just looking at the spreadsheet, the cash flow, right now we're receiving zero off this land. As I'm looking at, we get the $10 million up front. It's about 1.5, or is it $2 million a year we'd receive, the taxpayers of Mesa, off this piece of land for the next 20 years?
Based on their applied economics analysis, after the initial,
right,
when they
building
apply that
period,
initial
yeah.
sales tax off the construction, they're projecting an annual need that they'll need to commit to the city is the $1.575 million, okay, which is different than earlier than the $2 million.
So about $1.5 million for 20-some years. So, all right.
And Mayor,
additional.
Yeah, Mayor and Councilman Griswold, maybe this is a good point to make, is that's really what we've structured the deal is. It's a guaranteed amount to the city by protecting the city that we will receive that through several different issues in the agreement, one being the letter of credit, which will stand there so that if at any point that 1.5 is short during a year, we will be able to draw upon the letter of credit either to make up for the balance of that difference or the whole amount. So the city's trying to protect itself. And then, as Scott mentioned earlier, we're in a first lien position on the property also.
Okay, other questions? Tom.
If I can respond slightly differently to Rex's questions, because I think the two was it 1.5 or $2 million, the answer is both of those are true. It actually generates about $3.5 million. 1.5 is a credit,
and the rest of it.
That is the incentive. $2 million is net to the city, and that's quality of life and streets, the bed tax, and the general fund totals about $2 million. So actually both numbers are correct that you used, but the key factor is that it's 500,000, it's $2 million to the city, and the incentive is 1.5. So it still comes out bigger, which is what the number has to be over the life of the agreement.
So the city gets 3.5 million.
We get 3.5 and then $1.5 million
is payback, credited. Part of it's new.
Exactly, okay.
So 3.5 million of new police, fire, or whatever over the next.
Right. And again, Mayor, if I can continue.
Please.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk more about this on Monday night, and I don't want to preempt everybody on Monday night, but there's another significant aspect of this agreement that Scott referred to, and I think it's important as people are going to be trying to absorb these documents over the next 4 days before Monday night. And we've had a little heads up because we've been dealing with them for months as they've evolved. But, you know, the media is here and people are watching and there's going to be reports. And we have several additional, not just financial layers of protection, but we also have some protection that drives the use of the property. And, Scott, you mentioned them, but you didn't really get into the detail, and I don't blame you. But I think it's important that we have a close of escrow date here, January of 2010, which is essentially 2 years after the election, which needs to be called to approve. And I applaud the developers for coming forward and structuring this in a way where, frankly, I think good lawyers, I don't say crafty lawyers or devious lawyers, I just say good lawyers could have structured this deal in a way to avoid the election. That was not the direction of this council, and that was not the direction that the developer wanted to go. We decided we needed to do this above board, let it out there so that people can have their right to vote as it's required by Section 613 of the Charter. So everybody went into this in a way that let's keep it all above board, let's not be devious, let's lay it out. But after the election, if it's approved, basically 24 months, 26 months actually, but January of 2010 is when escrow closes. If they don't close, there's no transfer of the property, we keep the $50,000, that's non-refundable, and we go on with life as it is. That's the reality of the way it's structured. That's level one. Level two is if they close escrow, they have 60 days to start construction. If they don't start construction in that 60 days, the property reverts to the city. We have to give back the $9.95 million, but we still have our property. They're out a whole lot of money that they had to spend in order to pull the fees and get everything done that they needed to do for close of escrow, but that's the second step. So if they close escrow but don't start construction within 60 days, property comes back to the city. Second level of protection. Third level of protection is they start construction, but they don't complete it. The property doesn't, and if they don't complete it and keep the thing operating for 3 years, then the property doesn't revert anymore, but there are use restrictions in place on the property that require whoever owns it to build something like Wave Yard and to build something like the resort hotel complex. So they can say, we're not going to do it, but nobody can do anything else on it except us if we take it back. And then the fourth level is if they complete construction, run it for 3 years, then the covenants come off, the conditions come off, but there are still a big, long laundry list of things that can never be done on that property. So all four of those protections, which probably drive the developer crazy because they'd like to probably have more flexibility on land that they own, but these are protections that we wanted because we're giving up something. We're giving up a golf course here, and we want to make sure that we get what we want when we make that exchange. And that's what we're doing. And at every step of the way, the city's position is protected in order to ensure either we get the property back or the property is used the way we want it, or at minimum 5-8 years down the road, the property can't be used for things that we don't want. So all of those things are on top, by the way, of the deed of trust, which means if they don't make a payment, we get the property back. And if they stop on any one of these things, if they don't use it this way, if they don't build Wave Yard, no incentive. So all the sales tax is still ours. All of it's ours if they change the purpose. So believe me, folks, when we talk about a deal, I mean, I have to be perfectly honest with you. I still have the big philosophical hurdle, you know. I still have the, should we be engaged in incentives? But this deal has been structured in a way that protects the city economically, protects it from a use standpoint. So that problem has been solved for me. I think I told somebody early this week that I needed to read the development agreement, and unless I found something that scared me, I didn't find anything that scared me. I found things that would scare me if I was representing the developer.
I'll be perfectly honest. I mean, no, they know that, you know. But I'm not, from a city standpoint, these things have been. I'll say this again on Monday night. But I want, we got 4 days here where it's important that the public have an opportunity to understand what's going on here. And this document, this deal, is a give and take on everybody's part. And there are other issues we can talk about later. But the things that most concerned me, which was the economic protections and the property use protections, have been as airtightly crafted as I could imagine. So again, I just wanted to say that today because I think it's important that we have 4 days of discussion. Now that we know what the deal is, people can start talking about the real deal as opposed to the imaginary deal that's been floating out there for months.
I appreciate Tom's analysis of this. We have a unique council with different expertise, and sometimes the lawyer and the document reader comes through, and we appreciate that somebody goes to that degree to take a look at all the different nuances and how they play out with different scenarios being cast in front of someone. So thank you, Tom, for doing that. I concur that I think the city is protected from and meets the requirements of what the state law is. We'll have that discussion. If somebody reads the documents and wants to point out something on Monday, there's certainly that's why we have a public discussion and hearing on it before we have the vote. I want to compliment the developers and the staff on working through. This is a very, very complicated deal. There's still some nuances out there with the relocation of some parkland and the VORTAC and some of the rest of the stuff and the water issues that are other developments, other documents that will have to be drafted to clarify some of those points. But I think overall, to date, we've come a long way to knowing what this deal will be, and I think it's a sufficient point that we need to bring it forward. Open it all up for public discussion and see if we want to put it on a ballot. The point was also mentioned by Tom that there was a way to structure this so that the water park feature would have been sold and the rest of it would have had the incentive so that there would not have been an election necessary to be called. I think the council said, no, that's not being fair and direct, and let's not do it that way, and I appreciate that we're bringing forth with and want to have a full open discussion with the city and its residents and make sure that this is something that they're supportive of. I concur a little bit with the sentiments that I don't think anyone likes to do any type of development incentives. It's always been something that I have not liked doing. I would hope that there would be a worldwide don't incentivize private business. They're a private business and just don't do it. But if you do it in one city, then you do it competitively in another. And if you do it in one state, it's competitively in another state. And if you do it in one nation, it's, you know, there's incentives in other airplanes and all kinds of things come to mind internationally. So I'd like to tackle that problem someday. I'm not quite sure how to get my hands around it, but as long as that is the nature of the beast that's out there, I do not want to sit on the sidelines and not compete. And I think the making sure that there's a positive return to your community is absolutely necessary. We're not just doing this for an ego trip. There's going to be benefits coming into the city. I think the other aspect of it is it's now a golf course. That's a huge step, taking away a golf course, which you think is kind of what cities do. They build golf courses, they build parks. So now we have a golf course, and we're going to say a 9-hole golf course at a major intersection of two freeways is not probably the best economic use for that land. That's tough to do. I mean, and I think this council realizes that the $50,000 to $100,000 or whatever the amount is that the golf course generates just doesn't cut muster with what type of economy we want here for the city of Mesa and the potential that this has to be a huge attraction to that 101-202 intersection. Obviously with a Bass Pro Shop and now with a Wave Yard, we are setting a It's, to me, it's kind of like bookends. We have Williams Gateway with the job center on one corner of Mesa, and now we have Wave Yard and Bass Pro and the retail on the other corner. So we're kind of working around Mesa and having something that's going to be destination locations with special features, and this will absolutely be one of those with the combination of the two projects if they are built as envisioned from the documentation we've seen. So I think it's an exciting day for Mesa to have this opportunity to explore. But it does require eliminating a golf course and relocating some ball fields, which is a tough thing for elected officials to do. Usually we don't want to tread down that road because there will be opposition to eliminating those. But I think it's in the best interest of Mesa to do so. So again, thanks for the work. We'll, as you mentioned, the documentation will be released here by the first part of the afternoon so citizens can scrutinize it, and I welcome you to do so. Councilor Griswold.
I agree philosophically. I don't like incentives. I wish someone would even the playing field and you wouldn't have to do them. But I've said in the past, like electing me high school quarterback, I sit on the field every play because I don't like the rules. You've got to use the rules for what they've made. Our neighboring cities have been using the rules and taking some of the best projects and causing a lot of our sales dollars to go to neighboring communities because we haven't used this tool. I think we have to use it and use it wisely, and I think this is a good project to do it. I think this is starting to attract sales dollars back into our community from neighboring communities. I think Bass Pro is the same way. I think I'm looking forward to the opening next week, so we'll see. We have to do more than just open Walmarts in our community, I think, to get dollars back into our community. So I'll look forward to Monday.
Okay, any other comments? Councilmember Whalen.
Thank you, Mayor. You mentioned briefly the economic level that Riverview produces. That's one thing we haven't talked specifically about this morning. Someone from staff indicate the net revenue from Riverview each year to our city.
What was the question?
Riverview or Waveyard?
Yeah.
Riverview, the net impact of the golf course to the city each year from operations.
I had heard the golf course was 50 to 100,000, but I'm not sure if that's still accurate. Is that both? Oh.
Hi, Mayor. Councilmember Whalen, Red Evans with the Parks and Recreation and Commercial Facilities Department. And Mayor Hawker is correct. One thing I need to look at, and I can get that those numbers back to you, is when we look at the golf operation, we have Dobson Ranch and Riverview, but it's easy enough to separate those two. And so we'll do that today, and we can send you that net number on Riverview individually.
That's fine. Mayor, I'm supportive of the project and looking forward to the discussion on Monday night. And if I may beg your own indulgence, I've got a plane to catch, if I may be excused for the rest of the meeting.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. The other one on the golf course, if you get $50,000, you also get nothing for the land value that's underlying it. So you've got this huge asset out there, and it generates $50,000 a year. I mean, that's not what we do parks and recreation programs for typically, but I just want to put those economic terms out. Because if it cost, I think the last time we looked at it, an 18-hole golf course, when we were looking out by Red Mountain, it was like $9-10 million to construct the course. And then you break even if you turn it over to a private developer to run it. So the economics of that type of thing just don't work out if you're looking for a business proposition type of economics. So, all right. Other questions or comments on this one? Okay, thank you very much. We'll hear more about it, I'm sure, on Monday night. Item number three is hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on the scheduling of upcoming bond elections.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. The back page of the packet that Chuck will really be discussing into the next item, I've included just the one slide we're going to talk about this morning on future election dates. And maybe before I get started, it'd probably be a good time for me to ask Scott Butler to come up and talk a little bit about the status of House Bill 2392.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Brian had asked me just to come up and briefly update you on where we stand on House Bill 2392, the Home Rule and City Election date change. On 2 days ago, it passed the House by a vote of 51-0 on its final read, and will be heard probably any minute now on the Senate floor for a final read. So assuming that goes well, which we have every indication that it will, it could be on the governor's desk by this afternoon. So just wanted to let you all know the current status of that. Yeah.
All right.
So, Mayor, the handout that I've provided you this morning assumes the passage of 2392, as Scott talked about. And what we've done is just kind of outline known upcoming election dates as well as potential election dates out to November of 2012. As we've heard a discussion this morning already about the November 07 election, there's an election option there that we have available to us. With the passage of 2392, the city, there would be a city primary election for three districts as well as the mayor's seat. We will also be at that time doing either a home rule election or a permanent base adjustment election, and we'll be back to you in the fall to discuss what our options are for that one, on which way we would like to go. excuse me, if necessary, there'll be a follow-up general election in May of 08. We then have an option again in November because the state law change that requires us, and I should point out that talking about GO bonds, that we are now required to have GO bond elections in November, in the November election cycle. So that rules out having them in either March or May of next year. There is an election option that's open and available to us in November of 08. Then also included that in September of 10, in November of 10, there'll be, again, our city elections coinciding with the statewide elections. We may, depending on what we choose, home rule or permanent base adjustment in 08, we may need to come back then in November of 10 and either get our home rule on the right schedule at that point or on the state schedule, if you will, or have a permanent base adjustment, again, depending on what happens in March of 08. In September of 12, there would be another city election. It would be three districts and the mayor again, as well as in November, there'd be a general election if necessary. And I've put at the bottom of your sheet here a future GO election, a GO bond election. What we have started to do, and as we have outlined and continue to work on the program for the bond elections, is to really look at the time frame of upcoming future elections. Previously, the city council was on an election cycle that coincided with the mayoral election date, and it was every 4 years because we were out for a citywide election. Right now, we have prepared the bond projects, and then we can come back to you after deciding which date we're on. We'll come back to you, but we're looking at running the project schedules through fiscal year 2012-2013. That allows us to have a bond election in November of 2012 and then budget for it in fiscal year 13-14 the following year. That schedule then is anticipated here by that November 12th election, November of 2012 or 2012 election. That could be, it council, we put that out there, that could be a November of 2010 election also. But again, we're at a national basis on 2012 mayoral election, citywide election at that time. And if we were, the thought was is to get back on our philosophical every 4 years. Right now we're looking at, again, try to focus back to bond elections. The numbers we're currently discussing range between a $310 to $350 million bond sale. Again, for transportation or streets, police and fire, capital facilities. We have yet to bring back to you the specific projects. There's a number of projects that came forth in the Public Safety Committee that need to be come back and be finalized. So that is why I have the range of between 310 and 350. But that's at this point. So Mayor, Council, more than happy to answer any questions. Tried to line out the dates here for you. And any questions you have, Chuck and I'll be more happy to answer them.
Okay, let me start off by saying I'd like to, I've tried to weigh the aspects of the financing, and my understanding is that if we wait till the November of 08 for the, in fact, you'd have to wait till November of 08 to do the GO bonds. You could not do those in March.
That's correct.
Okay. So we either have to go November of 07 or November of 08.
Right.
What, if you do not sell the GO bonds, what are we having to hold back on or not complete? Are we in any financial difficulty on not being able to keep up with infrastructure and the rest? Do we have enough already authorized from the last election? How does it affect our budget if we wait that year and do it in November of 08?
Let's set aside all the utilities and infrastructure. That's separate. Those have been authorized and sold, and we're selling those. Don't have effect on general obligation bonds. So as far as our ability to provide water and sewer line improvements, that will continue. Really what the question was, and I think we've tried to address this in a previous study session, the impact, there's some obvious impacts that projects that will get delayed a year or more will cost more in that, you know, subsequent time period. We also know and are concerned about the potential of the effect on services. You know, one of the issues we've heard from the fire department is not only, it's a combination of needing more fire stations, but really just building new stations doesn't necessarily solve the problem. You have to have more people, manpower, to staff those stations. And so trying to deal with that over another year, I think, is something that we could see some changes or some difficulties in response times. Now, we've tried to address some of that in the proposed budget with these TRVs, transitional response vehicles, where we're trying to strategically locate emergency medical response groups to help assist with that response time. Now, I'm not going to tell you that's going to solve the problem, but we are trying to find within the current budgets ways to do that. But there still will be a concern about getting further behind on the number of stations that are needed. So that's one impact. So, you know, overall, I think it's the question is, we have those issues there. I think one of the things, though, we have a large task ahead of us is the continuing of the educational process to the voters, to the citizens of Mesa, about the need for these projects. And ultimately, and I think this is the part that we need to work with council, is what are those specific projects? I often read in the papers that it's a blank check to the city. That couldn't be further from the truth. These projects will be the projects that will be funded by the property tax. I also hear it repeated and put in papers, this is a temporary tax. That is wrong, too. That is not a temporary tax. It's a dedicated tax for debt service related to capital improvements. If you believe that the city will not be issuing capital improvements, only be issuing capital improvements for the next 4 years and that will satisfy demands of the city for the next 100 years, that's incorrect. There will be a need to continue to invest capital improvements, whether it's new fire stations, communication systems, streets, all those things will continue to have needs, and we will have a dedicated tax, property tax, to satisfy that debt service. So we want to do the right thing. I think part of the concern we have is if we wait, there are those impacts on service and costs, but at the same time, we want to make sure when we go out that we have a well-educated, informed public. They know exactly what they're voting on. That the projects are well-defined, that we've been able to share maps of the city that show where those street projects are going to take place. We can talk about the need for fire stations and define further the needs in the police department. So that's kind of where the impacts might be.
Okay. I have always liked the November of 08 options, but that's with a caveat. I think that I like the November of 08 because the new council and mayor that are elected in March and May will be the ones that would have to then live with the dollar magnitude and the rest of what they set out. But it throws it a little off, because if we're out of office in June, I believe they have to call the election in July, so they would be in office for a few weeks and then have to approve the budget and call the election. I'm almost would rather have this council call the election in advance. I guess they could always cancel it, so that they knew that an election for $350 million or whatever it was called for, and then that would be part of the discussions during the campaign, whether they supported it or not, and then they'd have to live with it, or they'd have to rescind it once they got in. So I am in favor of doing a November of 08 election, but I would like to call it almost as soon as we have the data available and the maps and the rest, so that we can start with this council saying what's being called and either support it or not support it, depending on what the how we feel, and make sure that through the election cycle, whoever's running knows that there's one called, and that's part of the discussion and the debate, because then they're going to have it for 4 years and they're going to have to live with it. So that's my caveat on it. I think that I am willing to not put it on this November, because I agree there's still think there needs to be additional education out there. I think people understand we do have a budget that's tight, and we are still working on, cutting it as much as we can. But I think we're down to the point where we cannot grow a population and not increase our some of the resources that we have coming in. We can't accommodate it with the existing model. So that would be my druthers. I appreciate this coming forward. So under the topic of your presentation and discuss direction of upcoming elections, I would say don't have it November of 07. Plan it for November of 08, but call the election as soon as we have the data that's available, so that it's been called. And it's not the new council that calls it, it's this council that calls the election. And then the other council can further ratify that it goes on the ballot or not, but at least they know the intent of what this council was, if I have some concurrence. So, let's see, I think Rex was next.
There's still a lot of confusion out there what a GO bond is. Utility bonds, people understand, as a repayment source. The water rates pay for the new pipes. A park, a police station, a fire station doesn't have a repayment source. It's like building schools with no school bonds. For years, we've imagined building schools and taking away teachers' salaries to pay for your school. It just, no one would build schools that way. Well, Mesa's done that for years, how we've built our infrastructure, our parks, our police, our fire. We've taken the money out of our operations and paid for our bond debt. It doesn't work on a large city. So that's where you come. So the whole purpose of a GO bond is, if you want a new police station or fire station for $2.2 million, you know how much it's going to cost you. It does go away in 20 years like a mortgage. So, you know, if you want to call it temporary that way, but you're right, you're going to be issuing new ones probably after that for new, whatever it is, streets particularly. You know what it's going to cost you, what it's going to cost your house. As more people move in the city, your rates actually go down, because they're dividing it up. Right now, every new person moves in, we're subsidizing. This system, at least every new person comes in, helps pay for and lower your rate as their value comes on the tax board. So it's a, I'm willing to discuss it. I think it's a great topic for an election to discuss. How do you want to finance a growing city and not subsidize every new person that moves in? So I'd be willing to say put it on, and at least as a scheduled election, and let a new council decide.
Tom?
I have been leaning toward the November 07 election, but the more I read in the media about in the media, including people's vents and letters to the editor and different things, it's still clear to me that people have not quite grasped the difference between a secondary property tax and a primary property tax. And we had an election a year ago. We're not trying to get around that election. We're not trying to change the results of that election, because that was a primary property tax election. Let there be no mistake, no misunderstanding. If we put general obligation bonds on the ballot, the will of this council has been consistently expressed over the last 18 months that they will have a secondary property tax attached to them as the repayment mechanism, not just as a hypothetical one or as a backup one or as the backstop, but as the primary way. Now, boy, I shouldn't use that word. That really is going to confuse people. As the as the main way of paying those bonds off. So I think there is a need for further education. I'm also concerned about off-year elections. They tend to be lower turnout. They tend to be dominated, like the presidential nominating process, by the extremes of the two parties. And I'd rather have the whole electorate be involved in deciding these bonds. And so I know it's going to put a strain on the fire department. I know it's going to put a strain on the police department. I know it's going to put a little bit of strain on the streets department in terms of not having, we're going to have to try to find some matching funds in other places and that kind of thing. But I've also heard that we can make it if you guarantee us we'll go out in 2008. So I won't guarantee the results, but I'll guarantee that we'll go out in 2008. So I agree with 2008 both for both of those reasons, the education and the turnout. I just think it's important to get as many people involved as possible.
Scott?
I'm a little less concerned about the time frame than others. I think over the course of the summer, we're going to be asking our voters to educate themselves on this. And this, by the way, is a summary. there's more to this, I think, than trying to understand the difference between a primary property tax, which pays for operation and maintenance and can be used pretty much at will of the council, and a secondary property tax that goes to paying for exactly what it says on that piece of paper when they go to check the box of yes or no. So Tom hit a term, the philosophical hurdle that you have to get over. I suppose my philosophical hurdle is asking voters to go forward for the wave yard and knowing that we're four fire stations behind, we're a number of police officers behind our streets. We need to capture more dollars in order to get dollars from the county to improve our streets. So there are definite needs to be applied for these bonds. And this isn't just not idle, that response times are going up, response rates are going up, and that's going to have an impact on the health and welfare of our community, because it is. We're looking at an insurance service organization rating which determines what our insurance rates are. The amount of money you pay every month to your insurance company is based on an ISO rating, and that rating may be going from a 3 to a 4, meaning that there are businesses and industries and some residents may be paying more for their insurance, for their fire insurance in their houses, than they were last year and last few years. So we have a definite need. On the issue of this being a temporary tax, Chris, and maybe this is an easy one to hurdle, I think part of the problem with this idea of a temporary tax is when you go to vote, to keep this simple, you go to vote for four firehouses, let's say that's what we put on that bond. That's what that secondary is paying for. That tax goes away, once that's paid for, that tax goes away unless we approve another bond.
Well, I guess we need to be very careful. You want me to give you a list of all the capital projects that are needed for the next 50 years, we can do that. We can try to do that. That number will be so big that we have to spread it out over 4 years. Right. So you spread it out over 4 years for 50 years. That's my point, is that tax rate will be in place to continue to pay for the projects that we need today, 4 years from now, 8 years from now, 16 years from now, and into the future. So that what I want to be very careful with is, because all of us are here for the long term, we don't want to suggest to the taxpayers that the rate that you're going to see for the next whatever period of time somehow goes away, because we know that there are future needs. And so I think that's just, I'm already looking forward to the next bond election.
Right. It's dedicated to the four fire stations.
There, you're right.
5-6 years later, we need three more. That's going to happen.
There you go.
So you have to go to another bond election. So the voters out there get to say, for three more fire stations, that's going to impact your rate. That's the difference.
Correct.
So we're not going to get in that bait, because I'm begrudgingly going to agree with it wouldn't really matter. It would be 6-1. So with the November 08 and calling with the election of the for the idea of the wave yard, because I'm also aware that the secondary bonds aren't going to pay for the operation and maintenance, and there's what, 24 million net roughly if this project goes through the way, 24 million or so over the next 24 years, or I don't want to confuse people on that because I'm confusing myself as I go along here. But there's money here that will go to the general fund to help for operation and maintenance. Mm-hmm. So over 3 years. So having this election go forward, letting the people look at it, decide that it's a good idea, if that's their will, then this project will, as Tom very articulately stated, this will bring the city more money for operation and maintenance, here he comes again, and that could be applied toward next year's bonds when we have to go for fire stations, because we're going to have to staff those too. So I'm aware of those issues as well. So I'm going to jump over and probably trip and break my face on my own philosophical hurdle, but I will agree with the 08, although it's uncomfortable to push that green button for that. Thank you.
Other comments on this? Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. In December of 2005, we had a plan that we tried to get 4 votes for that would have had the city being financed by using secondary property tax to pay all future general obligation bonds and a sales tax of 1.8. We couldn't get 4 votes. We had to go to a compromise, which was that some of us had to compromise and say, okay, well, we'll put the other property tax on the ballot. I have been out visiting neighborhoods, talking to people, and understood that they were very concerned about just saying, here, have money, do with it whatever you want to do. And it was another way of going about trying to achieve the same thing. The voters turned that down. So now we're back to the scenario that was really basically what we outlined. Instead of having 1.8, we have 1.75 on the sales tax. That was kind of a negotiation to get somebody to change their vote and to get this all to move ahead. But consistently, I've been talking about November of 2008 as that date. It seemed very appropriate when we thought that was when the mayoral election was going to be. It still seems appropriate to me, because I think that anybody, and I said this before, anybody who is either running for city council or running for the mayor's position has to weigh in on this, and they can't weigh in on it at a theoretical level. They can't say, well, you know, I would have, but you guys decided in 07, or, you know, I think that that sounds like a good idea, or I think it's a lousy idea. Okay, if you think it's a lousy idea, tell us where you're going to come up with the dollars to run the city. Don't talk about it theoretically. Don't be running for any offices up here if you haven't sat down and looked at that budget and you can come up with a way to make this balance. The numbers that we have seen comparing us in terms of our finances to other cities, if you look at the next closest city, my recollection, I'm looking at you, Jamie, because I'm hoping I'm going to get this number right. Maybe I should be looking over at Chris. I think the next closest one in terms of cost per resident per year to operate the city is Tempe, at $500 per year per resident more than the city of Mesa spends. If you want something with a comparable size, large size community, let's look at Phoenix, $1,000 per resident per year more than Mesa per year per resident to operate the city of Phoenix. Chandler, my recollection is that they're spending about $3,600 per year per resident? Is that, that's probably...
I wish I would have brought those numbers, but it's considerably higher.
It is. My recollection is it was between $3,500 and $4,000 a year, where Mesa is about $1,866 per year per resident.
Correct.
So when people look at these things, they need to, you know, we talk constantly about cutting spending, but we have to look at what the revenue models are that our neighboring communities are using. Mesa has revenue issues. Have we cut spending? Yes, we have. But I think that to not have this on the 08 ballot and put it on November of 08 would allow people to run for office without representing a true fiscal picture of how they would run the city. And I think that that's just wrong. We have made such difficult choices here. This council has been tough. And we have made really hard choices, and we've had people sit there with difficult stories, and we've said, we're sorry, it's too bad, we don't have any money. We have to do this. We have to be fiscally responsible. And to me, putting it on the November of 08 ballot is the only fiscally responsible decision, as far as I'm concerned, for the long-term fiscal responsibility of this city that we can make. And so, Mayor, for that reason, I'm supporting November of 08.
Okay. All right. I think we have the direction, November of 08. I think there also is some, let's wrap it up as soon as we can and figure out the time frame and what the legal issues are to call and the rest, and when we can do that, how far out, right, if that's the desire, so that we kind of know. I mean, maybe you don't call it hard. You have some flexibility in there if projects change or readiness or something else comes up, especially on streets.
Right, Mayor, and we've already started working on, well, we want to bring that back to council now, are the list of the projects and a priority perspective, at least from the staff recommendation, and how they would be scheduled out over a period of time. Bring those now back to council in a study session to get your concurrence with the projects and the timing, and then deciding, you know, also we kind of, you know, as much as we want all these projects, we need to also be sensitive to the actually the cost to the taxpayer. So all those things will be balanced out. We'll start bringing those to the council so we can have that package together, kind of think of what you're saying. So we know what the projects are, we know when the projects would be time to come, and what the estimated property tax impact would be, and then that would put you in a position then, I think, after that to start calling the election.
Okay. I'm familiar with a few projects out by the Williams Gateway area where there was some talk of developer right-of-way dedication and the rest. Let's take a quick look back at some of those to see if they're still interested and tell them there's one time window again so that we can leverage some more dollars by having them do some dedication. That may be their last chance, or they're going to be sitting waiting for the regional money to come through, and then we still may not have enough to fully build the improvements. So
we're actually having those conversations right now. So
all right. Good.
Yes.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
Mayor, I have a legal question, and I agree with you about this council calling the election. I think that that's the right thing to do as well. Mm-hmm. But legally, how early can we call an election?
Vice Mayor Walters, fortunate for us, legislation change were effective July 07. They did away with the 150-day deadline, so you can really call the election at any time prior to.
Great. I didn't know that. Thank you.
The date's been done away with.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Excellent.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else on this one?
We're good.
All right. Next, discuss and provide direction on the 07-08 tentative budget, including but not limited to the human services funding. And I think we have some issues that are still hanging that need some clarification on.
Mayor, what we thought we'd do is Chuck would walk you through his presentation on the tentative budget. And then we can talk about the follow-up issues, including human services, after he completes that, if you're
okay.
Good with that.
That's fine.
So included in your packet is for consideration for adoption on Monday is the legal tentative, which is the legal three-page document that we adopt to set our budget. What this will do for us is set the top dollar legal limit for our expenditures. From this point, or from the adoption point forward, we can adopt to that level or a lower limit. Obviously, now since we've made a bond decision election, there will be significant change in our plan CIP that you've had in your documents. This tentative presentation includes all those amounts that were in your budget documents that you received on the 10th.
So we could now announce that we've reduced the budget by almost $300 million, huh?
It won't be quite that much.
All right.
No.
Go ahead. I just.
Because what we'll be reducing.
We call it an election, we don't call one.
Right. Yeah, we'll be just reducing the first year's expenditures. So,
all right.
Yeah, I don't want to guarantee that kind of reduction. So we've set the legal limit. So I just wanted to go through some of the highlights. This is pretty much the same thing that we presented on the 10th. We, in the past, have changed our preliminary document to include carryover items. We included that in our tentative budget this time so that we didn't change any of the numbers so that we can stay consistent with what we've presented. So the first slide on page 2, or this first document, is just that graphical documentation or representation of what happens with our general fund, O&M. which does not include any of the capital from the grants, debt service, and we go up in that budget by $28.4 million, which is significant to slide number three, which shows you in the program areas how we've allocated those dollars. Public safety, about $21.3 million, $24.4 million. That's 75% of those total dollars. The remainder of those dollars really address the personal services cost that we've addressed in this tentative budget. So there hadn't been any change in what we'd presented there before. Then on slide number four, this is the all funds comparison from 06-07 to 07-08. As we've discussed before, we have $255.9 million increase. That was driven primarily by a lot of those bond expenditures, so that's the area that you see the primary reduction in. There'll be some debt service reduction related to that that I had built in. And then it gets back into our public safety focus and our tax-funded street maintenance and construction, which is primarily dedicated dollars from the HERF and the sales tax. So a real quick, compressed question, and then if you have any questions on that tentative document, we've got a set of those documents in today's packet, and there's a set in your Monday packet.
What were the contingency monies projected from 07-08?
Well, the contingency, total contingency with, and I don't have the breakout between the grants and debt service and contingency, but there's a $53 million increase in that overall category and in the general fund.
Okay, there it is, 52.6. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. What percentage does that get us to?
We're hitting our forecast targets, which were about 9.7. Our ultimate target's going to be 10% or 8 to 10%. We hit right where we were on the forecast. That's where we've kind of gone with the philosophy of what we presented in the forecast, and we've been holding true with that. So,
all right. Is that being pulled down because of our decision on the transit? Is that where that comes from?
Well, the transit, what we did with that was we've not been adding any operating dollars other than just what's absolutely necessary. Okay. So we've been taking it out of our one time. Probably the significant area that we've shortchanged this year is our IT budget, the infrastructure. That's the one area that we probably haven't gone through a cycle replacement analysis and modeled that out yet. We unfortunately took the money from that area.
Well, we're doing the same thing on the Arts Center, though. They're not doing the improvements that they anticipated in order to stay even. Isn't that the same type of scenario?
Yeah, that's similar. I mean, we take it from one-time kind of capital improvements.
Right.
They're being adjusted.
Okay, because it leads into some of the follow-up discussions here today on how do we pay for some of the other ones and how do we offset. So I was curious of how we were doing on the contingency money. The other one is the sales tax projections versus actuality. Didn't we hit a little higher?
We're going to hit a little higher. Once we started seeing in February, we were dropping off to what it was below what we were expecting at 5.3% growth this year.
Right.
We had 2 months of where that happened. Well, last month was good news. We're back up. So we're going to see a little bit of increase because I went back conservative. I forecasted that we're going to hit what we budgeted. So we're going to have a little bit a surplus in that area.
Okay, and we've already figured in the one time the state. We were a two-year lag, so we've had that big bump, and that's dropped off.
Correct. We've planned for that all year.
Okay.
But back to sales tax, Mayor, though. Chuck has said last month rebounded a little bit, but we still are seeing a soft retail sector where we're not seeing any growth in our retail sales tax component. It's coming in other areas, contracting, rentals, things of that nature. Hopefully that'll shift around here in the next couple months, too, and we'll start seeing some more growth in our retail sales tax component.
Okay. There. Now, the Rex, I think, mentioned the Wave Yard and the million a year that it would generate once it's up and going on sales tax. When does have we already figured in the Bass Pro and that retail complex?
We figured that into our overall growth, Mayor. We look at that financial model, and we look at what that homogeneous stream has been in the past, and then we do modeling into the future with that stream.
Okay.
And then we do look at the individual significant differences. I'll be analyzing what the car dealerships have done to us this fall.
Oh, okay.
So I'll be looking at that.
There was one aspect that was a positive that you didn't pick up in the models, and I forgot what it was.
That was the regional transportation plan. I did not know when we did the model in November that they were going to be taking over fixed routes, and that gave us some one-time money into the future, or some alternative money into the future. Okay. I will plan that into the future.
All right, but we can offset that on the transit component.
That's what we did.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I was going to say we're going to have to be cautious because we've lost a lot of car dealers and we're continuing to lose car dealers. And so, you know, that offset, we have to look at them individually and see what happens. I'm curious as to how we are discussing computer replacement cycle as a one-time cost. I don't view that as a one-time cost. And I heard it last time and I didn't say anything, but I heard it again today. And so I thought, well, I'll bring it up.
Well, the way we kind of do it, and it's not one-time because it's ongoing, but it's and it's not flexible, but that's the area, unfortunately, when we have need, we go to those one-time dollars. So any increase in operating, under our current scenario, reduces availability for those fixed costs. And we just have not modeled out that cost yet. So there is a little bit of unknown on that full need there.
I'm just telling you, and Chris, the conversation that we all had when we talked about one-time dollars, sale of land, things like that, we talked about using them for one-time expenses. And a one-time expense to me is not the cycle replacement of computers, because we know, and even now with software, we know when we get that software that within 5 years they're going to be saying, well, we don't support that software anymore. You have to buy our new upgraded XT model of software or you know, your support's gone. So I don't view those as one time.
I agree, and I don't think that's what we suggested. The $1 million was from a CIP fund that was not necessarily the cycling replacement of computers, but it was part of the larger infrastructure network equipment that we need. Now, someone could also argue that equipment has a certain life that needs to be replaced over time. It's probably not on the same schedule and magnitude as desktops, but there are the components that we were suggesting were being delayed were related to the larger network systems in equipment that needed to be put in place.
I guess that's a conversation that I think the council ought to have by what we mean by one-time dollars, one-time expenses, because maybe it means something different to different people than it does to me. But for me, you know, it's that you buy something that maybe a piece of land that you need for a park it's something. When we were talking about the last week on the transit thing, it was only because I only saw that as one-time dollars because the region was about to pick up the additional dollars. If it's an ongoing thing, then I don't see it that way, even if it's ongoing every 5 years.
And my characterization is probably a little off, is because what I'm trying to guard against is watching the operational, I call it creep, where we start violating the principles of what we've set in our model. So they're not one time, but they're capacity. But they may not be ongoing capacity. So that's kind of the way I've labeled that, Vice Mayor.
And I understand what you're saying. I'm just not sure I agree with it,
well,
Chuck.
I understand.
And I think that's a philosophical conversation for us.
Mm-hmm. Where's the $28.4 million increase coming from? What's
the
your breakdown? How much is sales tax versus the rest?
You know, I don't have that breakdown with me today, Mayor. I'm sorry. In the general fund, what we've done, if you remember, what we started referring to as our circle of life, as Chris has referred to, we just break that down on a percentage ratio because we don't have specific dollars come against specific areas.
Right.
So the big three with sales tax, local sales tax, state shared, and the enterprise fund, that percentage changes based on that ratio of capital, contingency, and debt service. So those three percentages have decreased.
But, Mayor, as a relationship of sales tax dollars contributed to the general fund activities, that 300 and some million dollar fund, actually the contribution of sales tax for the payment of our bread and butter services is less this year. Not that sales tax is going down, but because the debt service component is growing so much that more of the sales tax portion is having to go there. So it's being picked up What you'll see, Mayor, and we can get the actual breakdown, is coming from that state shared revenues that are increasing, as well as the transfer. I believe that's where you would have to say most of that's probably being picked up. But if I recall, the sales tax amount was actually, as it relates to the general fund, was actually decreasing a slightly.
Okay. Not a good trend. Okay, other questions on this aspect of the budget? We did have some issues that have not been resolved. So I was going through the packet, but I think you highlighted those.
Mayor, included in your packet under the second P4 item is a follow-up memo that I've provided to you. Several of them are answering questions and providing background information. Be more than happy to answer any follow-up questions you might have on those. But I guess what we're really looking for, the main ones today of human services funding, I think that issue was still hanging after the last discussion, as well as charges, how we're going to handle future utility charges at the Mesa Senior Center. And maybe if you want to go to the first human services funding and have that discussion, I think Carrie Kent and her staff are here to answer those questions too.
Okay. Can I start with the Alston House? I think you listed that one on it. It also had money from the State Heritage Grant and CBG money. What's the restriction on the house itself? Would we ever be able to sell that if we – would we have to buy another one? I guess we want to use those funds because they're there, but what making the decision to do that, what does it restrict us to?
Mayor, my understanding, if we do want to sell the house, that we would need to pay back the funds to HUD. I'm not quite sure on the grant. We'd probably have to ask the State Historic Preservation Office to see if we'd have to pay back the state funds. That would be part of the contribution that's going towards
it. I'm just thinking if we ever decide at some future date that maybe that wasn't a good idea, the other councils do, that we shouldn't be, having meeting places for a couple of different groups in our community and financing it through the city. They should do that themselves or whatever the can we get rid of that property?
I'd have to ask the state. I'm not quite sure on the state, but the federal funds would need to be paid back with any sale of the property.
Just the dollar magnitude, not an interest carry or anything else?
Well, if it's CDBG, the way that we've my understanding is that if we do sell it, it would have to be at fair market value and have to pay those dollars back according to the fair market value of the current sale.
Okay. Is that project going forward? I thought there was some aspect that complicated it.
It is. We just closed escrow last month. Okay. We're in the process now of working with our volunteer architect who's designing the project, as well as working with staff and the nonprofits to design that, and we're moving forward with the project.
All right. And how do we do any type of ongoing operations and maintenance? Will they then apply through another program asking for funds, or do they have their own network already established to raise those dollars?
I'm not quite sure on the O&M. My understanding is that I believe that would be the responsibility of the nonprofits. That's an agreement that we have with them that they'd have the responsibility. We do have a dollar a year lease with them, but that they would be responsible for the O&M costs.
And if they default on the O&M, what happens?
Then it does come back to us, and we'd have to make a decision on how we move forward with or look for another profit who might want to utilize that building.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Rex.
On that same issue, I would very much like if you, when you list that, you list grants as grants, general fund as general fund. I got a ration from a lot of people, including veterans, that we're not funding a veterans parade and we're funding, Alston's house out of general funds. No, it wasn't. It was a grant on the historical preservation from the state for this one house, and it was HUD money, so neither one could be used for a veterans parade. They were different, pools of money, but that's hard to explain, and it's even harder when we publish the information saying it's general fund dollars. So please, I'm getting tired of getting pounded on, so make sure we have accurate information. Thank you.
The Arts Center Restoration Fund, I think we had some discussion on the total Arts Center budget, and was that included in that dollar magnitude, or is that a separate?
That is a separate fund. That is a ticket surcharge that is set aside for the eventual restoration of the facility itself? Carpets, chairs? Yeah.
Okay. Somehow we need to, and maybe there's not a whole lot of these other funds, but comprehensively look at the Art Center with all of the different budgets that we receive on revenue and expenditures so we can get a handle on it, because I had forgotten we even had this. Right. Vice Mayor.
Mayor, this is a charge that I requested, and the council mm-hmm. agreed to add on to each ticket so that we wouldn't end up in a situation down the road like we have at the convention center, which reminds me, are we now putting a fee on convention center for restoration?
We didn't have time to include that in this cycle's fees and charges, but we'll look at that in the future.
But you can bring that back to us quickly, I would assume. We wouldn't have to wait for a year. Anyway, and the intent was not to spend money right away, but actually to build that fund. And then Randy just talked to me when I was sitting in the back and said that they have developed a plan. It is not their intention to touch it in the next couple of years, but they're looking at what needs to be replaced, when it needs to be replaced. So when you have to replace an expensive piece of sound equipment, when you have to put the new carpets in, whatever that happens to be, that the fund exists to do that so that you don't end up drawing on the general fund to restore the property. So that was the idea behind it, and the report I heard from Randy is that they're moving forward with a plan.
I like the concept. I just am trying to somehow grab comprehensively what that Art Center costs and what is being used as kind of facility charges that are paid by the users. And this is a fund I never threw into that mix. I forgot that it existed. Okay, I think I highlighted at least two. The human services funding, staff is seeking direction as to final allocations. Thought we pretty much gave direction. What did we miss on that one?
Mayor, I think there were some follow-up questions after that about whether or not there were some team programs the council was asking about funding, or whether there should be a cost of living increase for all of the agencies at the same time.
Mayor, we had two issues. You were going to look and see if there was potentially some other monies that you would like to utilize to fund and give some funding to not only the teen suicide hotline, but also to the CARE partnership. I know Councilmember Jones isn't here today, but that was an interest of his as well, to provide some funding to that agency.
Okay. I was supportive of staff's, not the board's recommendation, which I think took the teen money out and gave it back to prehab.
Right. So this is in addition to the staff recommendations. This would be over and above those recommendations.
All right. And Councilmember, where would the money come from?
That was the decision you were all going to think about over the past week.
Okay.
And it depended really, Mayor, on the amount. I think there was a discussion of $10,000 to $15,000. If that would be the case, it would be a general fund allocation. It would just impact our general fund balance. We would have to do some an adjustment there.
Why did you set 15,000 was general fund but 50 wouldn't, or how'd you come to that conclusion that you'd take it out of general fund?
Well,
I thought we had kind of agreed that if you're going to cut something, you better find out where it's coming from besides general fund. All right, Vice Mayor.
This is me, and let me just go back to a conversation this is a point that I raised with staff.
Okay.
So that's why they're bringing it back, because right. and it goes to a comment that Tom made last week, and I didn't really respond to it at the time, but this notion that we had all agreed that we weren't going to do anything with these funds. We made an agreement last year in that budget discussion that any dollars we took from someplace, we were going to put someplace else. You know, if we found a cut, if we found an ad, we had to have a cut that went with it. But we didn't say that. We said something that was similar in this year's budget, but we gave an increase to every department in the city in order to fund the additional cost of their personnel expenses. Every department's getting like 3 to 5% in order to fund those additional personnel costs. And the question that I raised was, why is it that when we contract out, and in essence, that's how I see we do this. This isn't us just doing it out of the goodness of our hearts. It's a benefit to the city that we have these programs, since we put that model into place that says this has to do with what is a benefit to the city, can somebody else do it at a lower cost than we are doing it, and then we contract out for that. Why is it that we're saying we're saying level funding when it isn't really level funding, it's a functional decrease in funding? Now, I had some more time to reflect on what I said last week, and I think I'd have to really sit and think hard about the suicide prevention hotline. While I think it's a very noble and laudable thing, I'm not quite sure how that fits into the prevention and the safety model that we set up. And so I would, if you want to argue with me on that one, I think you'd be valid in arguing with me on it. But I think we have to look at whether really this is level funding. It is not level funding, in my opinion. It's a decrease in funding. So that was why I wanted this to, okay. I wanted to make that point, Mayor.
Right. Well, I actually agree with the decrease in funding. I still think that there needs to be some way, and I had talked about a 10%, maybe it's a 5%, and maybe we're actually having a decrease because we're not increasing it, and the cost of inflation is decreasing it, so I'm getting 3% anyway. I'm in favor of sticking with that model, that over time it does go down. This is kind of a not a direct one, but I'm not adverse to doing this, and I'm not in favor of putting more money into it. So that would be where I'm at. Tom?
Mayor, I think you all got a memo from me before I actually joined the council indicating my disagreement with this whole concept. So I'm not in favor of expanding it at this time, whether it's pursuant to the specific $5,000 for the Teen Lifeline and $5,000 for the CARE partnership, which I think was the proposal that was on the table when we left the other day, or pursuant to a cost of living adjustment. So I'm comfortable with what we decided last time, which was to use the staff recommendation at that level.
Okay. Other comment? Need some direction on this one, Scott?
Yeah, I'm not as sure about adding any additional. I think that organizations to the list. I think the teen hotline, while I have one teenager and another one pending, although she acts like a teenager already. Good Lord. I think that's a good program, and it was on the front page recently. I'm struggling really to fit that into the model, because I looked at each of these organizations and how think of them as a system, how they would impact, were they not there, how would they impact city services. And all of them seem to fit that model fairly well. Maybe draw a line to the teen hotline one, but I think it's a little bit more tenuous. I would be willing to discuss some increases to hold steady for those. I'm not as excited about adding any additional organizations to that list, at least right now. So I would be willing to talk about some additional funding if we can figure out where that's coming from.
What's the magnitude of a 3% across the board increase?
It'd be $22,000 to $23,000 on the general fund allocation.
Okay. All right. Rex?
I would agree with not any new organizations, but I don't think you can starve the ones that are doing the job in your community that you've asked them to do, and that particularly we said you're lowering our costs on our police and fire by handling some of these situations for us on the street, rather than us handling it in different ways. So either you go to the extreme, and there are extremes saying we shouldn't do these at all, and just the police will take care of it, and the fire department will take care of it, etc. Or you say these organizations stop some of those costs and stop some of the pain and suffering, you know, and monetary. So I would, if you could find, and I same way, I'd have to find $23,000 to be able to give these all 3.5%. Philosophically, I'm in favor of it. I would have to find physically the $23,000 in my mind from this budget, who's, you know, beginning to gel fairly quickly to do it, not just say take it out of reserves. And I'd be willing to look, but philosophically, yes, but practically, I don't have the 23 in front of me. So.
Okay, you're not getting a clear message here this morning yet, so let's keep trying. Vice Mayor?
That was the position that Rex just took is the one that I walked back to with my office last to my office last week. Mm-hmm. And then I sat there and thought, hang on a second. Nobody asked me to find, you know, make cuts in order to give the salary increases that we're doing on the salary. Nobody said to me, you have to come up with, you know, additional cuts to the city in order to do that. And a couple of years ago, I went through a very, very hard process, and Mayor, at your urging, and it was challenging. I mean, you look at what we were doing and what we cut out of these programs with putting a model into place that said, if we took these in-house, or if we look at the impact on these programs to the city, if they go away, what Scott was talking about, and Rex again, what would that dollar magnitude be? And let me just cite one. Our jailing costs are about to hit, I think, close to $160 for the first day in jail. Every day thereafter is over $105. We have no control over that. And I know we don't want to get in the jailing business, but it really is a huge, huge impact to our budget. By funding community bridges, it offers an opportunity for our police department to take some people who might otherwise, you'd have no option other than to book them into jail, and you put them in another program instead. And so the savings to the city mounts up very, very quickly in an instant like that. And I would be very willing to go back and look at this again and make sure that we really are targeting those areas that are most critical to the city. But I think that the program that we set in place, Mayor, I don't see it going away. I don't see over time it's disappearing, because I don't see that we can pick it up internally for a lesser cost. And that's really my analysis that's going on.
Any suggestions on how we get to a conclusion on this one?
Get more council members here.
Yeah, I think that probably if there were two more members, you'd probably have some concurrence with taking it out of general funds, is my sense from prior comments.
If I can just point out, the number is $824,000 from the general fund, so 3% of that is 24.7, so you're...
Well, I took the senior center out of this consideration since
it was... Oh, that's right, the 75,000. Okay. Yeah, let's get you there.
Yeah.
We anticipated that question, Tom.
That's good. So that it doesn't get tied into the full budget in this adoption, somehow we need to put this then for Monday's study session on so that we can get this one behind us before we get to the full budget.
Sure, we can do that.
So let's, and what I'm hearing is a, well, we still have two other council members that might want to have the teen line and the rest of them, but I think we're more morphing over to some type of a 3% across the board COLA for nonprofits, to call it a better
agencies that are funded.
Yeah. Whether, I guess they would have requested it, well, they will in future years for sure. Yeah. Would that work then, to put that on study session prior to Monday?
On Monday.
All right. Okay, let's see if we can get to the next one, which was senior center utility charges.
And there's really two parts to this, Mayor. The first one is wanted to make sure our understanding that the Neighborhood Services Department, Carrie's department, would absorb the $45,000 overrun this year for their utilities, and that in next year's Human Services funding cycle, we would take that allocation out of the overall process, and it would make it a constant, if you will, or part of our budget allocation. As long as we're fine on that, what we're really seeking direction on, what would occur, we would anticipate making a $77,000 allocation next year, and what occurs if the senior center were to overrun that amount in their utilization of utilities. I think we have a couple options there. One of them is to maybe put the utilities into their name, transfer the account into their name, instead of into the city's name, and give them a credit on their account, if you will, of that amount. And then they're able to watch and monitor their utility usage, and that's an option. We could also, if it's a requirement to come back and us absorb the balance, do we evaluate at the end of the year whether Chuck has whether we're on the good side of sales tax revenue and there's some money there or something of that nature, but we really need some direction on how, if there was an overrun next year, how we'd handle that.
Well, I like the idea of transferring it to their name with that offset, and then if it was less than that, they actually benefit from it. I mean, it's got to be both ways. If it goes up, they pay. If they really make some reductions, it goes down. But then you're talking about the year after that, then you're going to have to mark it in with the utility rate increases and bump it up for the same type of usage. If that's the program, I think that probably makes some sense, because there's still an incentive then to be diligent in making sure that they're taken care of. So that seems to be the one that makes the most sense to me, but I don't know if anybody has other ideas or concurs. Tom?
I have to run to a meeting, so I'm going to ask for to be excused, but I would not increase the level. I mean, I know this year we're sort of stuck. Give them $77,000, and I'm not interested in giving them more than that.
You want to transfer it over to their name? So
that's fine.
All right.
And give them an allocation of 77, whatever the number is. Okay. And if you take up the tuition reimbursement issue before I leave, I'm not in favor of increasing it above the
previous already incorporated.
That'll be next. Okay. All right. Okay, let's do the utility. Concurrence with switching it over to their name, setting it 77, and paying the 45.
Mayor, our hope is that our facilities folks are working with the senior center. We have some new chillers that are going to go online, hopefully in the fall to the winter. We're looking at their lighting and potentially changing that out to more energy efficient light bulbs. So we're going to be partnering together to try to assist in any way that we can to hopefully lower their utility bill. So we're all going to work together to partner on that.
Right. Well, if you're going to be spending a bunch of, unless that's an offset against the 77.
Probably not. But probably we'll need the 77,000.
If you drop it, then the city ought to get credit for dropping it then, too, and not letting them have that in their budget. I don't work out some of the details.
But, Mayor, what I hear the direction of the council is, let's just make this clear. We'll work with them on trying to control their costs. But based on the recent past, what we're saying, though, is to the senior services, we will transfer the utility meter for this these facilities to their name. Really, we're just talking about
the two facilities.
Mm-hmm. And as a result, though, they will then be responsible for any consumption of utilities above the $77,000. So what that means is, assuming that they do, a past history will be consistent going forward, they'll either have to come up with, and on the average, that number was about 40.
This year, about 45,000.
They'll have to come up with another $45,000 to pay that, or, and let's just make this real clear, the council understands we're putting the utilities department in the position where just will it be treated as any other customer, non-payment, that will be sending notices, and ultimately could result in the shutting off of the utilities, which also ends up being additional costs for reconnects. We're recommending that. But I also want us to be very clear about the consequences of what happens with that into the future. So, absent that, the only option we've been doing apparently in the past is that the city's department, neighborhood services specifically, has covered that additional cost. And I think the direction from the council is that's no longer going to happen. And as opposed to us dipping further into reserves, we will transfer that obligation to the senior services centers. Is that the direction that we have?
I think that's the direction. I think we have a committee that we could assign it to if there's something that comes back that doesn't work out after
we'll
you talk to them.
We'll try to monitor this to see when they're getting close to that point of all right, not making it work. We can do that.
Okay. And then the other one was the budget, or not the budget, the tuition reimbursement.
Yes, Mayor. I'm included in your packet, I guess, Debbie.
Attachment B.
Talk to this one.
Mayor, members of the council, what had previously been recommended was an increase from the current. We're currently at 2,200, and we were going to be moving that up to, Gary, was it originally 500? 2,500?
We were originally moving that from 2,200 to 2,800.
And then back last we were here, as we were making our presentation, Councilmember Somers said tuition reimbursement was kind of near and dear to his heart. Wasn't sure that many of his for or against it, but he said that he would like to see perhaps an increase in the tuition reimbursement. Currently, we're only at an 8% utilization rate, and there was some concern that maybe that is an indication that the maximum allowable increase isn't enough to offset the burdensome cost of college tuition. So we went back and took a look at some of those costs. ASU charges about $240 per credit hour. We factored in both part-time attendance as well as full-time attendance and felt like perhaps an increase to $3,000 would be a reasonable increase. But that's kind of how we got to where we are today.
And Mayor, the incremental increase over the original recommendation is $14,000.
Say that again?
The cost. The cost, right.
$14,000
to go from the 28 to the 3,000.
Assuming the same utilization. And departments, that's in the departments will have to find the money within their existing budget. We are not going to talk about increasing the budget. It just means that they would have to find the money within their existing budgets today.
Did you,
Scott?
I stepped on that. I shouldn't have. Did we hear anything from our department heads? Any concern over raising this amount?
No, I think they were fine.
Since it is coming from their own budget.
No, I think they're
for it.
The
city has some needs. I think I remarked the last time we could use some more attorneys, which disturbed me that time saying that, and it disturbs me just as much saying it this time. But also the promotional opportunities for police officers, even firefighters, linemen, those come with some educational requirements. And it benefits the city to have a well-trained, well-educated workforce. It works for our benefit because they, as we've seen in some of the actions I think here today, they fewer mistakes, don't cost us as much money. I think we're reinvesting in our own city by increasing this amount. It's a small amount. It seems to be coming from departmental budgets. Department managers don't appear to have any problems with it, and I would like to see it raised a little bit as well.
Okay. Is it legal, or do other cities have a caveat where if they leave within a period of 1 to 5 years, they pay it back? Is that part of this?
Yes, Mayor, that is part of our tuition reimbursement policy.
What's the understanding currently on the payback?
The policy currently states that if they leave within 2 years, they're required to pay back the full amount of that tuition reimbursement.
Then I would concur. I think that at least to match it up with the 6 credit hours and then track it with the credit hours, that's a 2880. So if that's the maximum amount of reimbursement, then I think we ought to track it with something that's logical. And if it's the ASU credit, then we just, if they increase theirs, we increase ours to match it up with that. So we're not totally readdressing it every time on the dollar magnitude. There's a reason behind it. So that's where I'd probably go. Vice Mayor.
And I agree with you. I do have a follow-up question on your question about reimbursement. Sometimes you'd like somebody to leave.
Well, it's true. You get an employee.
Why do you mean when you say that?
I was actually looking at Chris when I said it. But
okay.
Because he's responsible for all the employees.
Oh, that's why.
That's why, Chris. And sometimes you have an employee that you'd like to encourage to leave. Is there some discretion for the city manager to waive that repayment so that we don't have somebody that you have sticking around when you think it would be just really wonderful to encourage them to take that job someplace else?
If it's in furtherance of a settlement or resolution of a potential claim, we certainly could look at that, Vice Mayor.
Thank you.
Scott.
Looking at the more positive side of that particular coin, actually the benefit of that 2 year period, I just wanted to mention that that's a added benefit for the city of Mesa, because not all cities have that. I think typically they probably don't. So at least the way that our staff has set that up is our folks receive the education, we help reimburse that, and at least we know we're going to have them for 2 years, or we're going to get our
money back on the deal, unless, of course, it's like Claudia, or hypothetical.
I was looking at you, Scott.
Yes, I know.
Are you comfortable with the 2880, which matches up with the 6 credit hours as opposed to the 3?
Mayor, I think your idea, if we'll just make the policy that, let's try the policy that we track, index it with the...
ASU.
The ASU. I think that works out really well. That'd be good. Right.
Okay.
Great.
What else did you need direction on? Anything?
I think we're good to go. Thank you, Mayor.
All right, we are to item 5, acknowledging receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Motion second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Passes unanimously. Here reports on meetings and our conferences attended.
Can we wait?
I think we'll wait. Scheduling of meetings, general information.
Mayor, just quickly, there is a Transportation Infrastructure Committee meeting at 3 o'clock on Monday, June 4th, before our regular study session and council meeting that same day. And then just a reminder that there's also a General and Economic Development Committee meeting Tuesday, June 5th at 3:30. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Pre-scheduled, we have Nate Kane. Is Nate here? That was a long one to have to wait through. Sorry about that.
I have had Greg concerns.
We'll get somebody to operate it for you if you'd like. Nate, you have 3 minutes. Once you get set up there, we'll start the clock on you.
It's a long meeting. I think it's a bit deceitful for the late introduction of one of the maps that I've included there. It represents that this had been discussed at all of the neighborhood meetings and at the planning and zoning meeting, and it's not correct. The first map that I put up, which is the first one in your packet, is the one that we've been working along all along, which shows how Riverview Park was going to be divided up, and we know that the ball fields were going to be sent away, and that the park was basically to remain at about 30 acres. The next map, the black and white one, this is the map that has been shown at the 3 meetings starting at April 22, 23, 24, Monday, Wednesday, and Tuesday in April when they had the neighborhood meetings at Whittier. Likewise, that's the main map that's been used at the meetings for planning and zoning, at least on the 10th and the 17th that I went to, and I understand that that's the only map that was used. So all of the discussion that came about berms along 8th Street, the changing configuration of Riverview Park, what would happen to the ball fields, was based on that map. Suddenly, on the 21st, when you guys got the notice of intent, I asked for a copy of that, and they sent me it by email, but it was missing the map. Had I seen the map, I would have raised hell on the 21st. That is the map that you guys saw earlier today, which now shows a linear park. So I think it's disingenuous to act like that the citizens had an opportunity to comment on that map. They would have been all over this linear park. All the discussions came about, is there any anticipation in the design of Waveyard to consider that there might be a widening of 8th Street? We got a lot of response from Mr. Pugh. It had nothing to do with there being any linear park along 8th Street. Likewise, the boundary on here, if I can go back to the other map, there was many comments about how this parcel up here was going to move down here. There was comments about, is this a good trade-off? The park will be bisected by the street, etc. Never one comment about the fact that this parcel was not going to end here, but instead would continue all the way along here. You know, frankly, we're basically going to have the city maintaining Waveyard's front lawn. Now, I heard earlier today that the operations and maintenance will be done by Waveyard. Unfortunately, that is 6 acres of property that is being deducted from the Riverview Park and has no useful function. If this is a city park, fine. I suggest that we put a skateboard park up here at the left entrance of Waveyard, and how about a dog park at the right entrance, and we can line tennis courts all up along A Street. It's not a useful park. Linear parks are usually designed out of remnants of properties, like an abandoned railroad track or something. They're typically not something that you design from the start. Have I hit my time? Thank you.
We'll certainly have an opportunity on Monday, too.
Yes.
So, all right. Okay. Thank you. Items from citizens present. Are there any requests to speak?
Yes, Mayor. We're going to hear from Marilyn Winterstrom.
Okay. Marilyn?
Where's the timer? Mayor, Council, interestingly, I had the same topic with a little bit different twist on it. On May 21st, which was your last regular City Council meeting, you had two conflicting maps in your hand under two different agenda items and unwittingly approved both. The first one was the rezoning map that accompanied the introduction of the rezoning ordinance, agenda item 11D, which graphically identifies the physical boundaries of the, quote, reconfigured remainder of Riverview Park. It was that map that was approved by the Planning and Zoning Board on May 17th. And after the fact map, which was Exhibit A, Mr. Kane just referenced that, referenced in the Notice of Intent, which you also adopted under Agenda Item 14 at the May 21st Council meeting. It graphically identifies wholly different property boundaries of a, quote, reconfigured Riverview Park. It is that map that was never submitted to nor approved by the Planning and Zoning Board, and which is in conflict with the map that they did approve. It also counters the graphic and oral Waveyard presentations at the well-attended 3 public meetings held at Whittier School in April, and I attended all 3 of those meetings besides the 2 Planning and Zoning meetings on May 10th and May 17th. I assume that the fraudulent notice of intent map is also included in the Waveyard Development Agreement package, which is agenda item 10F on next Monday's regular agenda. You can't have it both ways. Pick one map, not both, for the physical boundaries of Riverview Park. If you pick the notice of intent map, the presumed development agreement map, and I don't know what's in that yet, the property must be reposted for another zoning hearing to make it consistent with the zoning map that's before you now for approval on Monday. That will likely throw off deadline dates for a November election. Also, if you do approve this, that other after-the-fact map, dishonestly calling a half mile of Green City narrow street frontage along 8th Street a, quote, reconfigured Riverview Park, so Waveyard can take yet more acreage out of the public park itself, you'll be violating the very zoning ordinance that you'll be adopting the same evening, and zoning is enforceable by the police power. Mr. Mayor and the rest of the council members here, what has occurred is the epitome of skullduggery. I'll be happy to supply you with the verbatim transcript of the May 17th Planning and Zoning meeting to prove my point. Thank you.
All right. Are there any other requests to speak this morning?
I have no more, Mayor.
All right. And the study session is adjourned.